Jeff, did you want to?
How do I get him up here first?
All right, we'll ask Jean Thorne and whoever's with her to come forward here. I saw your retinue come down the hall here, and I didn't know who all was.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jean Thorne from the Governor's Office, and I'm here today as the project director for the health plan expansion. And with me is Hirsch Crawford, who's the administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs.
I just want to clarify something, Jean, because we had heard a rumor that the Governor's Office was going to consider this report as the report to the legislature, which was required in 2519, and 2519 was supposed to be a report to the Leadership Commission on health care. So are you considering this fulfilling the statutory requirement?
Mr. Co-Chair, the statutory requirement was to submit the waiver application to the Leadership Commission prior to submittal to the Emergency Board, and we did submit the waiver to the application to the Leadership Commission.
Okay.
That's what was required, was to submit it to them.
Okay, so you don't consider this to be fulfilling any statutory anything?
As far as I read the statutes, there isn't a statutory requirement to present a verbal or oral report.
Just dealing with rumors and getting out of the way.
Okay. What we'd like to do today is try to bring you up to date on the major issues that are part of the waiver application for the restructuring and expansion of the Oregon Health Plan. And you should have a handout here. This is a pretty complicated set of issues that a number of groups have spent a number of months working on, and we're going to try to be succinct and highlight the major changes that there might be in policy that are part of the waiver application. And the waiver application itself is, I think, 80-some pages long, and you folks probably wouldn't care to read all of that, but you're welcome to. It's on a website if you'd like to. Just to briefly explain kind of the basic components of House Bill 2519 that related to restructuring of the Oregon Health Plan, there are really three components to it. Expand the Oregon Health Plan subject to funds available up to 185% of federal poverty level. Expand the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, a current state-funded program, to 185% of the poverty level and claim federal match. It currently is a state-funded program. The bill also lays out a goal of having available funds in FEOP be equally distributed between group and individual coverage. And when we get into this a little bit more detail, we can show you how that looks now. Major issue, establish two benefit levels in the Medicaid program, OHP Plus and OHP Standard. And I'd like to draw your attention to Attachment A because it just tries to kind of graphically lay out who will be subject to what under this. And as we go through this, we'll talk in more detail about the eligibility, the benefits, and the budget neutrality issues. But as you can see on the left, and these are graphs for the federal poverty level is listed on the side. And these are January 2002 rebalance numbers that are part of the DHS rebalance. The common on the left column, you have basically categorical eligibles, pregnant women and children. All of those, there's about 332,000 combined of those. They would continue receiving the benefit package that's currently available. In addition, there would be expansion to pregnant women and children under age 19 from 170 to 185% of poverty. In the middle, OHP Standard are about 100 and, I don't have my glasses, 8,000 of the current caseload that would have a different benefit package, and we'll get into that in a moment. These are people who are adults who are only eligible for the health plan because of the current waivers we have in place. On the right-hand side is the FEOP program, and it is currently capped and they expect by October to have about 5,200 people as they try to move towards having more people in group coverage, because currently about 10% of their expenditures are for group subsidies for group coverage, and about 90% for individual. And again, there would be an expansion there to 185%. OHP standard and FEOP would be capped, and we'll get into that in a moment. But there are really three parts to this. OHP Plus, which is for 300 and some thousand of the current eligibles. OHP Standard, which would be for about 100 and some thousand of the current eligibles. And the FEOP program. From there, like Hirsch to talk briefly about the strategy that we've discussed and have agreed upon with our waiver consultants on how we can structure the waiver to claim as much federal money as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Hirsch Crawford with the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. And what I'd like to do now is to talk a little bit about the waiver strategy and then move into a brief discussion of some of the eligibility and enrollment issues that are significant issues that you will see as a part of the waiver itself. But I think in terms of the waiver strategy, the most important point is that it has been designed to allow us to maximize and to fully utilize all of our CHIP allocation. We're currently not spending all of our CHIP money, and as you know, in CHIP, states have 3 years to spend their allocation or they begin to lose it after that period. And so what the waiver will allow us to do is, first of all, to spend all of our CHIP money and take advantage of the good match rates that we have in CHIP. If, as Gene pointed out, you look at a copy of the waiver application that you find on the website, what you'll see there is a single document. But when we actually submit the waiver, it will be split into two separate documents. So one will be a traditional 1115 waiver. Another one will be what's called a HIPAA waiver, and I'll get into that in just a second. But I just wanted to clarify that the formal documents that will go into CMS will actually be two waiver documents, but all the information for those two documents is currently in the document that's on the website. Again, our strategy is to amend our current 1115 demonstration waiver so that we can use that flexibility to get federal match on the FEOP program, so it will no longer be a fully state-funded program, and then apply for a new, what's called a HIPAA waiver, or a Health Insurance Flexibility and Accountability Initiative, is what it stands for, to allow us to basically expand our CHIP program up to 185%, and that will also allow us to get CHIP match on parents of CHIP children and also on other adults. And our strategy would be then to use that CHIP money as far as it will go, and then to the extent that our waiver expenditures which exceed our CHIP allocation, those will be federally matchable under our traditional 1115 demonstration waiver. And so the two waivers sort of go along in parallel. We use CHIP as our first source of federal matching. When we use all of that up, then we flip over back into a traditional 1115 demonstration waiver. The term of the HIPAA waiver is 5 years. And what we will try and do is to structure both the 1115 and the HIPAA waiver so that they expire at the same time. So that in effect, even though we'll have two waivers, the program will be operating pretty much as though it were one within one waiver framework. In terms of eligibility and enrollment issues, these are a number of, in some cases, fairly significant policy issues that have been developed through the waiver application steering committee process, and I just want to go down and highlight these. First is that we will be proposing in the waiver a cap on enrollment for people who are covered under OHP standard and also under the FEOP program. The waiver itself is structured to be fairly general, so it says a cap on people covered under OHP standard. Our intent, though, in implementing that would be not to cap people who are under 100% of the poverty level, but to use the cap to control growth between 100 and 185% of the poverty level for people who are enrolled in the OHP standard program. In order to discourage people from dropping private health insurance in order to join the Oregon Health Plan, we will continue to require a 6-month period of uninsurance in the FEOP program. We will continue with our six-month period of uninsurance in the CHIP program, and we will, for the first time, require that people who participate in the expansion population who are covered under OHP standard also be subject to a six-month period of uninsurance. In terms of premiums, we will require premiums for people participating in the OHP standard population and also in the FEOP program. Those are shown in detail on attachment B in your handout. The information on the top half of the page is the proposed premium structure for people who are covered under the OHP standard benefit package. The bottom half of the page are the premium structure for those individuals who would be covered under FEOP. The only thing I want to clarify about the information at the top of the page is for people who are under 100% of poverty, the dollar premiums that you see there are in fact the ones that we are proposing to use. For people who are between 100 and 185% of poverty, those premiums would be determined using the percentages that you see in the right-hand column for people between 100 and 185% of poverty. You see some examples there in the left-hand column of what we believe those premiums would come close to be. But in fact, it's actually the percentage that will be used to determine the premium for people between 100 and 185% of poverty. And then you can also see the FEOP premiums down at the bottom. Another change with this waiver, certainly on the OHP standard side, is that for the first time, people who do not pay their premiums when they are due would be subject to disenrollment. Currently, what we do is you're eligible for a six-month period. You're expected to pay your premiums monthly, but if you don't do that, you can continue to be covered for that six-month period. You just can't sign up again. And what we will be proposing to do under this waiver is to move towards a methodology which is much similar to what you see in commercial insurance and also identical to what FEOP has been using for some time now, in that premiums are due in the month in which the premiums should be paid in the month in which they're due, and if you don't pay your premiums after some sort of grace period, you'll be subject to disenrollment. People who are disenrolled for non-payment will also be precluded from re-enrolling for some period of time, and we're currently working to determine exactly what that period of exclusion would be. We'll also synchronize the way in which we do eligibility between FEOP and OHP standard by using the same periods over which income is evaluated. We'll use the three most recently completed months in both to determine your eligibility. And lastly, for people who are eligible for OHP standard, if those individuals also have employer insurance available to them, and if FEOP is open, then you don't have a choice about what to do. You have to enroll in that employer-based insurance if it's available to you and FEOP is open. However, people who are in the OHP plus benefit package, people who are categorically eligible, will have a choice between enrolling in either the OHP plus plan or in employer-based insurance if that's available to them. They can pick either one of those options.
We turn to the next page. I'd like to spend a little bit talking about the benefit structure, because this is the part that there have been a number of groups spending quite a bit of time on, and I think Representative Winters and Representative Cruz and Senator Fisher all were part of the waiver application steering committee that really struggled with this. In discussion during the session, there had been agreement that if the benefit package needed to be at about 78% of the current benefit package for OHP, and that it would allow then, at that time, 42,000, we do have some new figures now, there'd be closer to 56,000 people to be covered, the combination of additional federal funds and the reduction in benefits. So the waiver application steering committee and other committees spent a good deal of time trying to see how could we get to a benefit package for this OHP standard population. These are adults who would not normally be eligible for Medicaid, except that we already have our waivers. And so we are asking For the waiver application itself says we would continue the current OHP coverage for the OHP plus population. We are requesting a streamlined process to allow movement of that line. So the current 700 and some list of condition treatment pairs, we would continue using that process for the OHP plus population. As you know, we have, except for I think two times that we were able to move that line, we have really faced resistance from the federal government about moving that line. And their primary concern is because we have a mix of people, 300 some thousand people, who are eligible for Medicaid under federal law, mixed in with 100,000 of people who are only covered because Oregon has chosen to do that through a federal waiver. And so when we've attempted to move the line before, their concern has been on those who are categorically eligible. We are requesting, though, a process that is not one that takes months and months and months to get a response from the federal government on. As for the OHP standard population, we are requesting approval from the federal government to allow us to have a benefit package for those people that is actuarially equivalent to Medicaid mandated benefits or higher. Now, currently, that's at about 56% of the benefit package. So in there, it's what would be the equivalent of the cost of hospital care, physician care, those kinds of services that are mandated. But we are then outlining the initial benefit package that is being recommended, which is at about 78% of that value. And if you look at Attachment C, that outlines what would be covered and copayments that might be on there or benefit exclusions. Now, the other prioritized list is layered on top of this. So if there is a condition treatment pair not covered for the OHP plus population, it is also not covered for this population as well. But in addition, there are some other exclusions or limitations. As you can see, I think both the Health Services Commission and the Waiver Application Steering Committee really struggled with this, because once you get past the first six categories down through ambulance, you are then talking about optional services. Prescription drugs may be optional in the minds of the federal law, but if you don't have access to prescription drugs, you're going to end up spending more in some of those other categories. Likewise, mental health and chemical dependency. If we don't have availability of treatment for those services, you're likely going to end up spending more in the other mandated categories, plus in the public safety area. Dental was an area of special concern. The dentist came in and put together a package that they thought was a reasonable package that would allow very basic care and emergency care and preventive care for people on OHP standard. Again, these are adults. So as you look down here, you can see here are the anticipated copayments that are part of these. I would point out, one of the things that was interesting was that as we looked at different copayment amounts, because the legislature had already directed as part of OMAP's budget that DHS go after federal approval for copayments in the current program, so for instance, $5 for ambulatory services, we didn't want to have a lower copayment for the OHP standard population to have the OHP plus actually pay more. So you can see the various copayments that are assumed here. Down below is also a listing of preventive services where no copayments would be required. The health plan contractors specifically asked that the copayments be dollar amounts and not be percentages, because those are harder to calculate, and that they be collectible. And so, for instance, on physician services, they said if physician is going to the hospital or a nursing home, that's not going to be collectible. So there are certain services that be excluded from copayments, but otherwise trying to keep the process simple. The Waiver Application Steering Committee also looked at the possibility of tiering copayments based on income level. And I think even though philosophically most of the members would have liked to have done that, knowing that people at the lower end of the income level may have less resources than someone up near 185%. There were a number of issues around the administration of that that made it really not feasible for either OMAP or the managed care plans. The one area in which they believe that tiering would be possible is in prescription drugs, because all of the managed care plans and OMAP utilize vendors who have electronic systems in place. And so as you can see there, for those under the poverty level, there is one schedule of co-payments, and for those over the poverty level, there is another schedule. The other thing that is different about these co-payments are that under Medicaid law, a person cannot be refused services because of inability to pay. We are asking for a waiver of that. So in fact, a provider, if the co-pay was not available, could refuse. Now, there are certainly there are other federal laws that are non-Medicaid laws that may apply, such as to hospitals, and so we're not in a position of requesting waivers of those. But the intent is that the co-pays have meaning, and that, in fact, people be required to pay them in order to receive the services. Beyond the OHP standard package, because we are requesting federal match on the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, and 2519 directed that a benchmark be established that if a person wanted a subsidy to pay for their portion of a plan, that the plan would have to meet certain requirements. The Insurance Pool Governing Board looked at a number of plans that were available in the small group market, those most commonly available. And what you'll find on Attachment D is their benchmark. So if someone is in FEOP or is wanting to enter into FEOP and they want a subsidy for either group or individual coverage, then those plans must cover the services that are listed as covered benefits and would need to meet the kinds of cost-sharing requirements that are